This is an ABC podcast.
If you grow up in the country, rodeos might be a huge part of your community. Usually it's more about the social side of it, but more and more young people are getting into it as a sport. So what's behind this big resurgence? Hey, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. In a bit, we're going to take you to the bush to hear firsthand from the cowboys, the cowgirls. Also coming up, remember those wild scenes of right-wing militia groups and Trump supporters storming the US Capitol last year? Well, investigations into what happened have revealed some really crazy stuff we'll fill you in. First, though,
Hack. Foot and mouth disease is a viral disease that impacts cattle, sheep, pigs and goats.
On Triple J.
Have you been to Bali lately? Or maybe you got a trip coming up? It's one of the places that Aussie tourists couldn't wait to get back to. Thousands of people are flying in and out every week. Well, there's a viral sickness that's spreading in Bali that has authorities really worried. It's not COVID, it's foot and mouth disease. Have you heard of it? If you're a grazier, you know exactly what I'm talking about. This disease has the potential to decimate Australia's multi-billion dollar livestock industry, and it could arrive here on an unsuspecting traveller at any time. If you don't know what foot and mouth disease is, it's time to find out because you're going to be hearing a lot more about it. Our Tassie reporter April McLennan's got more.
If foot and mouth came to Australian shores or even Tasmanian shores, there's the chance that we'd have to euthanise all our stock, which they're the lifeblood of our business. So it would send us bankrupt if we were unable to have livestock on our property, because that's the type of land that we can run sheep on and we can't really do anything else with it.
That's George Gatenby. He's got around 7,000 sheep on his property at Campbelltown in Tassie's northern Midlands. George is super worried about the foot and mouth outbreak in Indonesia, where more than 1,000 cases of the disease have been detected.
Oh, it'd be devastating. Our animals are our life. We treat them like our children. Our animal welfare is front of mind at all times, so that if we lost our sheep, it would devastate our business and devastate us as a family.
Foot and mouth is a livestock disease that impacts cows, buffalo, sheep, camel, goats, deer and pigs. And it spreads between animals through their breath, contact with the blisters and other bodily fluids. It can actually kill young animals, and an outbreak in Australia could wipe over $80 billion from the national economy over several years. Overnight, Australia's international livestock markets would close.
If foot and mouth came to Australia, we would lose market access, which would mean we wouldn't be able to sell our stock. Most of our livestock is sold export through channels to America, China, Europe, and the Middle East. And those markets would be shut straight down because they're protecting their own industries from foot and mouth.
Biosecurity officials are on high alert after the disease was detected in the tourist hotspot of Bali. Ross Ainsworth is a Bali-based veterinarian who lives in Seminyak, and he says there's about 100 cows roaming around just 300 metres from where he lives.
So there's just a lot more opportunity for a tourist to come close to a cow. You don't have to touch the cow. The cow has the potential to drip some saliva or other body fluids onto the ground. That can survive there on the ground for a little while. And you walk through it on the way to the spa or the pub or the restaurant.
There's growing calls to ban travel between Bali and Australia. And it's a move Agricultural Minister Murray Watt has ruled out. So don't worry, a Bali holiday is still on the cards. Instead, biosecurity surveillance has been beefed up at airports, including more detector dogs. But researchers found that under certain conditions, the virus can actually remain infective for 11 weeks on boot leather and 13 weeks on rubber boots. And Ross says the risk of tourists carrying the virus back to Australia is really high.
So there's plenty of time for someone to get to the airport, get on the plane, go home and then interact with an animal. That shoe is, I think, the most dangerous part of the potential for transmission.
There's also a push for travellers from Indonesia to use foot baths with disinfectants at airports. But Minister Watt says foot baths won't be introduced at this stage because passengers might take multiple pairs of shoes with them on holiday. And because if people are wearing thongs, the chemicals in the foot bath could irritate their feet.
I'd be happy to irritate a few tourists' feet in order to save Australia $100 billion loss without even including the massive animal welfare catastrophe that would result.
George has some advice for those of you lucky enough to be heading over to Bali for a beach vacay.
Enjoy your holiday. I'm jealous. But go over there, buy a new pair of shoes and throw them out on the way out the door. Get a new pair of thongs at the airport. Remember, food security is so important. Australia exports 80% of the food we make. It'll ruin our regional towns and communities that support livestock if the disease comes into Australia. So be aware.
Hack on Triple J. April McLennan with that story. And let me know, if you're a young farmer and you're worried about this, how would you be affected? Message in 0439 757 555. I want to find out a bit more about what is happening here. Tony Mars from the National Farmers Federation, and he's with me now. G'day, Tony. Thanks for coming on Hack.
G'day. Thanks for having me.
How worried are you about a foot and mouth outbreak in Australia?
Very. Extremely worried, more worried than I've ever been about this sort of disease. And I can tell you, farmers across the country are pretty well holding their breath at the moment, just hoping and doing everything they possibly can to raise awareness of this so the disease doesn't make it here, because I think your report said it quite accurately. It would absolutely devastate the livestock industry, rural and regional communities, and would have just such a massive impact where we're really worried.
It's been around for a long time. Have we had it in Australia before?
We've had it 150 years ago. We had it. So, you know, obviously it was a different world then. People weren't travelling near as much as they do these days, of course. So we've been successful, and it's a real, you know, strength and reflection on agriculture in Australia and the community that our products are so highly regarded around the world. I mean, we think we produce the best food and fibre in the world, but large parts of the globe think so as well. And that is largely because of our pest and disease status. We're regarded as, you know, a high quality, sustainable, safe, clean and green producer. And if foot and mouth disease makes it into this country, exports will stop. You know, we'll just lose billions and billions of dollars. And it's not all about the dollars. There's a significant animal welfare issue here. You know, the number of animals that would have to be euthanized would just be absolutely devastating. And again, your report identified it. I mean, farmers would have to be putting down stock left, right and center, and that would just be absolutely just such cause for grief and anxiety and stress for everyone, obviously including the animals.
Yeah, we've got some messages coming through. Someone says, Dave, our market will collapse overnight. There'll be mass cullings of potentially 150 million animals in Australia. Rural land values will collapse overnight, sending farmers to the wall. Another person messaged in saying, I was in Bali earlier this year, spent some time in a village area. I got foot and mouth disease. I had antibiotics there and another course when I got back. So this is something that, you know, people who've travelled to Bali are having some experience with. I'm wondering, Tony, are you happy with the government's response so far? Do you think we need a travel ban?
Look, travel bans are really, really drastic, and it has a whole range. You know, these sort of decisions have a whole range of implications that potentially, you know, we haven't thought of. The agriculture minister's up there at the moment in Indonesia, actually assessing, you know, the situation, seeing what can be done. And importantly, we want to make sure that we help and do as much as we can to help Indonesia. This is a problem for them, obviously. And we've, you know, always had close relationships with Indonesia and help them out with, you know, a whole range of things. And we desperately want to keep doing that with foot and mouth disease. It's a big problem for them. So, you know, we're looking at what Australia can help with Indonesia to help manage this situation, get a bit of a sense of what's happening up there, what we can do on the borders there, and then, you know, make sure that we do everything we possibly can on the border back here. So are they doing as much as they can? They're certainly on the right track and on the front foot. We do think that we need to, you know, think about screening passengers coming from Bali in a more intense sort of regular way. We think that foot pads or foot baths just try and help sanitise footwear coming back in. Obviously, you know, if people are walking across paddocks or on paths and things, you know, they could have come in contact with it. The other thing that we also need to do, and thanks for having us on the program for this particular effort, is to raise awareness. If people are aware of the risks and they can take some small steps, then that will help reduce the risk.
Yeah, I know you've got a campaign out of, you know, encouraging people if they're going overseas to throw their thongs out, you know, like their footwear that they might be wearing in Bali, to throw that out when they get back, so there's no kind of risk of transporting this disease through that channel. I'm wondering, Tony, like there's probably some people listening now who think, oh, look, I'm not a farmer, I feel really bad if this was to happen, but it doesn't really affect me that much. I guess the impact would be felt by everyone, right? Not just farmers, because if stock are wiped out, it means meat prices go up, milk prices go up, things like that would all skyrocket, right?
Absolutely. We've had, unfortunately, a little bit of experience with disruptions to the food supply chain. So, you know, supermarket shelves being bare, and also increasing prices as a result of floods and things. So we don't want that to continue. And if there was an incursion of foot and mouth disease here in Australia, it could mean there's an immediate standstill of all stock across the country. So that means, you know, abattoirs would close down. There'd be no more, there'd be a significant disruption to the meat supply chain and potentially dairy and other products. So it could have a huge impact on everyone's day-to-day activity. And that's in urban centres. It's obviously in rural and regional communities, because you think about agriculture and the supply chain, you're talking about trucking, you're talking about packaging, you're talking about retail, you know, food processing. Hundreds of thousands of people are employed in those jobs. So, you know, they would potentially be out of work. It would have a huge economic impact. So, you know, what we're calling for is some small steps for people to look at their footwear, look at their equipment and baggage and luggage that they're bringing in from Indonesia and Bali, and just do everything they possibly can to clean it up, sanitize it, and if they need to leave their thongs or footwear behind in Bali, please do, because it is worth it to prevent this disease from coming to Australia.
And just quickly, Tony, we've only got a little bit of time left, but that's the advice for travellers. What about young farmers? Is there anything they should be on the lookout for signs in their stock?
Well, if they're in the industry, they'll be aware of it. And, you know, many farms have biosecurity measures already in place. So, you know, we talked about footbaths. If you go onto a farm, or many farms, you do have to walk through sort of a footbath or a footpad or something like that. But certainly the agriculture industry's awareness is at a high level. But yes, looking out for signs, I mean, it's not here at the moment as far as we know. So it's awareness and, you know, looking out for signs, of course, but hopefully we can prevent that. Where, you know, we don't want to have to manage an incursion as much as we possibly can.
All right, Tony Maher from the National Farmers Federation, appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me on.
We've got some text messages coming in. Somebody says, I'm not a farmer, but this really scares me. Another person also says, foot and mouth disease in animals is not transferable to humans. The person who messaged in before talking about hand, foot and mouth disease, two different things. That's an important distinction there.
Hack.
Good bull ride. Just feel like nothing can stop you. Best feeling ever, really.
On Triple J.
Look, we're staying in the bush now, but something a bit different. Rodeos. Have you ever been to one? Because they're a huge date on the social calendar of so many rural communities, and people travel from all over the country for events like the Mount Isa Rodeo. Even people from the cities get into them. They're not for everyone, but as a sport, it's definitely having a moment. So many young people are wanting to get involved. So it's time to chuck on your hat, get your jeans on, because reporter Toby Loftus is taking us into this wild world.
All right, Benny Bo, the cowboy out there.
Everything to do with it, the thrill, can't really put it down to one thing. Yeah, it's the best feeling ever, really. There's nothing else like it. Won't find anything that'll come close, I reckon.
Ben Bode started bull riding when he was about 11 years old. He's 18 now, and soon he'll swap his hometown of Billawila in central Queensland for the amped-up rodeo scene over in Texas.
We're heading over to America to ride for the Youth Bull Riding World Finals over in Abilene. And we've all qualified to make it, so we're going to head over there and see how we go.
He's heading over with his 16-year-old brother Jack and fellow Central Queensland athlete, 12-year-old Rex Walker.
What do you enjoy most about it?
The thrill, the people. It's just fun, exciting. Feels like you're on top of the world.
While a lot of kids his age spend their time on video games or in the backyard, Rex spends his free time clinging to the back of a bucking bull.
I don't know, I just kind of hopped on a few potties at home and really found it really fun, and decided I wanted to go to a few rodeos and then went on from there.
The community's really got behind the boys money-wise, with farmers even donating beasts for auction.
I'm proud of where I've gotten, and I hope I do pretty good over there, considering that I've only done a bit here.
The National Rodeo Association says heaps of young competitors are starting to get serious, especially now that international travel is a thing again.
But yeah, definitely, if you want to make it being a rodeo cowboy a full-time career, the US is kind of the goal for every young competitor, and we're getting more and more of a pipeline of our best competitors making the way to the US.
NRA board chairman Jason Hall says rodeo is getting more and more popular.
In the last sort of 25 years, there's been a lot more professionalism introduced into the country. So things like, you know, junior development programs and animal welfare rules. I think right at this point in time, we're going through quite a huge resurgence in popularity. We're getting record crowds at most of our rodeos. Participation numbers are on the incline.
Jason reckons one huge driver is social media making the sport more accessible. And another is because of young riders and mini bulls.
The mini bull game in Australia is really, really starting to explode. So rather than using, you know, calves and the potty riding, it's now fully grown sort of bulls, but they're mini bulls. So we've seen the numbers in those sort of mini bull rides, the under 12 and under 15 divisions, you know, increased 2 or 3 times over the last couple of years.
Ariana Varachetti from Broome started to compete in her first rodeo events when she was about 18. Now living in Mackay, breakaway roping is her main event, and she trains every day she can.
Breakaway roping is just, it's a timed event. It involves a car and then yourself and your horse. And the aim is to rope the calf the quickest. Probably like an average winning run at a rodeo would be about 2 seconds flat. So it's pretty quick. I love it because of the adrenaline, like it's a really quick, fast event, and the competition like has in Australia has gotten extremely hot. It's pretty awesome to see how far it has gone. It's a female-only event. The breakaway roping is actually the biggest event in rodeo at the moment in Australia. We can get anywhere from 40 to 60 competitors in just our event alone.
But while popularity is increasing, the RSPCA says there's also increasing public concern over the welfare of animals in rodeo. It's opposed to the sport and advocates for enforced standards. Each state has their own requirements, but only the smallest territory with hardly any farmland, the ACT, has actually banned rodeo. Competitors like Ariana say their animals are number one.
I 100% can see where people come from when it comes to animal welfare, but I think if they were to stand back and have a look at how these animals are treated. Like, my horse alone is like, he's like my baby. Like, I'll do anything for him. But we worry about them first and then ourselves.
And yeah, the young cowboys from Central Queensland agree. They're busy gearing up for Texas next month to compete against the best young riders from around the world. Nine years after starting to competitively ride bulls, Ben Bode won the National Rodeo Association Reserve Champion Under 18 Bull Rider title, guaranteeing his place at the World Finals.
Been doing a lot of practice at home, heap of practice bulls, going to the gym, just trying to get as fit as possible, and yeah, hopefully it works out. Pretty sure it's 3 rounds, and it's winner take all pretty well. Riding up against some of the good fellas over in America, so it'll be a good challenge. And I've got a scholarship to a college over there for bull riding, so I'll stay there for an extra 2 years and rodeo with the college.
16-year-old Jack can't wait.
Oh, when you make a good bull ride, and just feel like nothing can stop you. Best feeling ever, really.
Hack on Triple Jack. Reporter Toby Loftus with that story, produced by Angel Parsons. Thanks so much to Toby for that one. Hey, just quickly.
Yeah!
Okay, that wasn't that good. I always wanted to do that on radio, but it kind of didn't work.
Hack.
I was in the vicinity of a conversation where I overheard the president say something to the effect of, "Let my people in, they can march to the Capitol from here."
On Triple J. Who could forget the intense scenes out of the US last year when thousands of Trump supporters, right-wing extremists, others stormed the US Capitol building, destroying property, threatening violence? Some people have been charged, but US politicians are trying to get to the bottom of what happened and how much involvement Donald Trump had in the violence. There's been a whole bunch of hearings underway over the past few months. Another one's about to start, and some of the evidence has been really intense. Ellie Grounds has more.
The events in Washington have taken a violent and tumultuous turn in the past few hours.
Donald Trump held a rally outside what was supposed to be this ceremonial vote confirming Joe Biden as the president.
All of us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by emboldened radical left Democrats, which is what they're doing.
It's not protest, it's insurrection.
Now US President Joe Biden says it was
one of the darkest days in the history of our nation.
On the 6th of January 2021, a violent group of Donald Trump supporters stormed the US Capitol building in Washington, D.C., overrunning police and security, vandalizing and looting the place, and threatening violence against politicians.
To protect the Constitution of the United States against enemies foreign and domestic!
The date was significant. It was the day a joint session of Congress was set to formalise Joe Biden's victory in the 2020 presidential election. And Trump, who was still president, wasn't happy.
To use a favourite term that all of you people really came up with, we will stop the steal. I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard.
The violence and chaos lasted several hours. The attack led to 5 people dying and hundreds were injured. Over the last year, a group of politicians called the US House Select Committee has been investigating the attack. Here's the committee's vice chair, Republican Liz Cheney.
Over multiple months, Donald Trump oversaw and coordinated a sophisticated 7-part plan to overturn the presidential election and prevent the transfer of presidential power.
There have been 7 hearings so far, with one still to go. And evidence has been presented about a bunch of things, including that Trump knew he had lost the election, but continued to claim it had been stolen.
He's become detached from reality.
That he pressured then-Vice President Mike Pence to overturn the election.
A mob that was chanting, "Hang Mike Pence."
That election officials were pressured to find votes for Trump.
I just want to find 11,780 votes.
And that he tried to influence officials from the Justice Department.
Just say it was corrupt and leave the rest to me and the Republican congressman.
And in the 6th hearing held last month, things really got juicy.
That evening was the first moment that I remember feeling scared and nervous for what could happen on January 6th.
That is Cassidy Hutchinson, who was a top aide to Trump's former chief of staff, Mark Meadows. She testified that Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, told her something was going to go down on January 6th.
We're going to the Capitol. It's going to be great. The president's going to be there. He's going to look powerful.
And when she told her boss, Mark Meadows, he wasn't fazed.
He didn't look up from his phone and said something to the effect of, "There's a lot going on, Cass, but I don't know. Things might get real, real bad on January 6th.
And on the day when the crowd started chanting to hang Mike Pence, her boss said Trump reckoned Pence deserved it.
He doesn't think they're doing anything wrong.
The 7th hearing, which wrapped up this morning our time, focused on an Oval Office meeting weeks before the attack.
One former aide called unhinged.
Where Trump and a bunch of his outside advisors were throwing around conspiracy theories and brainstorming how to overturn the election. And then at 1:42 a.m., Trump sent a tweet.
Trump repeated his big lie and claimed it was, quote, statistically impossible to have lost the 2020 election before calling for a big protest in D.C. on January 6th. Be there, will be wild.
Hack on Triple J. Ellie Grounds with that update. I want to dig into this a bit more. So I've got a real expert on US politics with me. He knows his stuff. The ABC's John Barron is the host of Planet America and he's with us now. G'day, John. Thanks for coming on today.
G'day. Pleasure.
These hearings, you must be glued to the coverage, right?
For our grandparents, it was Watergate. This is our equivalent. It's a sad way to spend the small hours of the morning, but, you know, it's a living.
Yeah, I imagine. It's definitely something that's got, it's dishing up really, really interesting things day after day, that's for sure. I want to know what the most dramatic revelation's been for you. Is there something in particular that stands out that you go, oh, I thought it'd be bad, I didn't think it'd be this bad?
Well, certainly there have been those juicy tidbits, such as in that Cassidy Hutchison sixth hearing last month, where we heard that President Trump allegedly was so angry at not being allowed to drive up to the Capitol building to join in the riot that he tried to wrestle the steering wheel of his Secret Service armored vehicle away from the driver.
Yeah.
And on other occasions, he was so angry he threw his lunch against the wall and aides had to wipe up the ketchup as a result, telling his staff, "I am the effing president. I want to go to the Capitol." That's juicy. It's also important, Dave, because it says that Donald Trump wanted to be a part of this protest, which his Trump supporters said, look, it just got a little bit out of hand and it's very sad and some people died. But the allegation against Trump is that this was always meant to be a violent riot that disrupted the certification of Joe Biden's election win to stop that certification as a part of a months-long plot for Donald Trump to stay in power after he lost the 2020 election. So what we're seeing is all putting little pieces into that puzzle of just how deliberate a conspiracy this was from Donald Trump and this cabal of so-called crazies that were around him, including in that December 18 meeting we've been hearing about today.
Yes, so much damning evidence, as you say, against Donald Trump. What happens to him when all this is done? Like, could there be criminal charges that come out of this? Could he end up behind bars? What's going to happen?
There's no doubt from what we've heard, Dave, that Donald Trump is reckless, is unfit to be president of the United States. But in a way, we knew that in 2016 and they voted for him anyway. They could do it again. The only way to stop him becoming president again is to convict him of a criminal offence. And that's why the Justice Department is looking very closely at this evidence that's being brought forward by this committee to see, has Donald Trump actually crossed a legal line? Very hard to prove. Did he incite a riot? Well, you could say maybe he did with that speech, maybe all those tweets calling on people. We don't yet have a smoking gun there, though. We don't yet have the direct link between Trump and those far right-wing neo-Nazi oath keepers and Proud Boys that we saw give testimony earlier today. So there are a few little question marks as to can it really be pinned on Trump? Remember, this is the guy that they couldn't quite pin the Russia stuff on him. They couldn't quite pin the Ukraine stuff on him. They impeached him twice, acquitted him twice, and he ended up leaving office in the most extraordinary circumstances. All this violence, still denying that he lost the election. How Trumpy can you get? He was told that he had lost the election, yet he claimed the election was being stolen from him while he was stealing the election.
Yeah.
It's classic Trump.
It's crazy stuff. There have been a few hearings already. When do they wrap up?
We're expecting one more public hearing next week, Dave, and that's where, if there is a loop to close that actually explains what Donald Trump was doing, the contact that he or associates like Roger Stone and Michael Flynn had with the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, the extent to which they wanted to instigate this violence, we may find out that next week. We may also find out what was Donald Trump doing in the 3 hours between when he gave that speech at midday at the Ellipse and at 4:17 p.m. after 2 hours of violence on Capitol Hill. He finally put out a video saying, "I love you, but go home," to his supporters. Now, was Donald Trump sitting back there going, "Yes, this is exactly what I planned to do"? Was he just watching a movie? We don't know, but they're trying to find out, because if there is a smoking gun, it is probably down to his intent on that day. What was he trying to achieve? We'll find out in that sort of 2 or 3 hour period on that afternoon.
And just quickly, John, we've only got 30 seconds left, but Donald Trump's talked about a political comeback in the past. Is he still talking about that?
He is absolutely still talking about it, and he's planning to do it by all accounts. And it's highly likely he is still very popular amongst the Republican Party. Right now, he's behind Joe Biden, but ahead of every other Republican. It looks like he's running, but if he's in jail, he can't run for president.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. We'll be keeping up to speed with all of this, and we know you will as well. ABC presenter John Barron, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Dave.
Hack on Triple J.
Big thanks to ABC presenter John Barron for his take on all of those hearings. And that's all we've got time for on the Hack podcast for now. I'll catch you next time.